Now we're holding on Tzadik Omid Beis, five lines from the end. We talked about in the Mishnah the case where a woman says, Tmei ani lach. She says to her husband that I'm tomei to you, meaning that she's saying that she was raped and therefore was also to him. So now we're going to work that out, actually. To be exact, by the way, I looked up further this that we were talking about yesterday. That in principle the husband can believe her if he wants to. We said according to Mishnah Rishona, he has to believe her. According to Mishnah Achrona, he doesn't have to, because we can say Shema Einen Nosnav Acher, but he could. And I mentioned that the Ramah points out you have Cherem D'Rabbeinu Gershom to consider. So what it is actually, since we have Cherem D'Rabbeinu Gershom, what it means is the same kind of thing as earlier you would have. If a woman wanted to get out of a bad marriage, she might make excuses like these kinds of things when it's not really true. The same thing, the husband, if he wants to get out of a marriage with his wife and have a sanctioned way to give her a gift, he may falsely say that he believes her because that way he can be out of this marriage, even though he doesn't truly believe her. That's the Ramah's point. Which in fact the Maharshal disagrees with that because she's the one who initiated the complaint. How can we say that he might be trying to get out of the marriage with that? But nevertheless, that's how the Ramah says, and that is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that we do have to take that into consideration, and therefore we can't necessarily say that he's always accepted to believe that we can always believe what he says, that he believes what she says without question.
It works out very different both ends. If she wants out of marriage and she gives an excuse and he wants out of marriage, so then that's a regular divorce then.
Well, that's fine, but then they don't need to be giving excuses. The point is, when you have a case like this where she's saying that she's also to him on the grounds of onus, or for that matter, on the grounds of Rotzen. You can also have where she's claiming that she was Mizana B'Rotzen, let's say. Where again, the husband is not required of the halacha to believe her, so not necessarily does he have the ability to say, you know what, I do believe you after all, only if we have some kind of evidence.
The Rotzen says she doesn't get her ruksuma, right.
Indeed.
Right.
Yeah. Right, we're going to discuss that point in the Gemara now, right. But still, you might have a situation where she wants to get out, even though she knows she'll fall for her uksa later. So the Gemara says, Amar Papa, Bodik Lon Rav. Rav tested us with the following question. The Papa was one of Rav's Samidim. Eishes Koyen Shemnamsa. If a Koyen's wife was Nanas, Yesh Lok Suba, we know the Koyen can't stay married to her. Yesh Lok Suba or Eimak Suba. Does she get her Suba payment or not? The point of the question is, on the one hand, we can say, Kivin de Onus Lagabe Koyen, Kerotzen Lagabe Yisrael Domi, since her being Nanas when she's married to a Koyen is the equivalent of a Yisrael's wife being Mizana Berotzen, in both cases, they're also to their husbands, Eilok Suba, then we would say, the same way as an Eishes Yisrael was Mizana Berotzen, and she doesn't get a Ksuba, the same way maybe we would say that a Koyen's wife, even though it was Ba'onus, also wouldn't get a Ksuba, because the result is that Halacha is saying they have to get divorced. Oy Dilma, but maybe Motsi Amrele, maybe the wife is able to tell the husband this is different. Ana Hachazina, after all, I'm suitable. I could have stayed married if you weren't a Koyen. The Gabro Hutanistahfasadehu, it's you, the man who your field was flooded, which is an expression that we had over and over in Ksuvus to represent the idea that it's your tough luck. In other words, it's your tough luck that you're a Koyen and that you can't stay married to a woman who was an Anusa. Had you been a Levi or a Yisrael, there wouldn't have been a problem, but the flaw is not from my side, and therefore I should be able to collect my Ksuvus. So that was the question. So we answered Rava, Masnisinhi, we can prove the answer to that from our Mishnah, where we said, the Mishnah had just said, that if a woman says to her husband, I am Tomei to you, meaning that there were relations here that made me also to you. So we said, the Mishnah Rishona was that he has to divorce her and give her Huxuba. Yotzis v'notlos Huxuba was the expression at the beginning of the Mishnah, and the Gemara is paraphrasing it over here, yesh lo Huxuba, that she has Huxuba. Now, says Rav Papa, we Talmidim said to Rava, when he asked us this question, let's break this down. The Maya Skinam, what scenario are we talking about in our Mishnah? Are we talking about that this is a Yisrael's wife? Well, what? How could that be? And if she was Mizana willingly, would she get a ksuba? We know, of course, that wouldn't be the case. The Iba Oynes, and if it was Ba'onis, would she be also to her husband? That we should say that he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba anyway. He would be perfectly entitled to say, you know what? I'm very sorry to hear that, but nevertheless, I don't love you any less, and then I want to stay married. There's no reason we should have to force him to give a Yisrael, to give his wife a ksuba just because she was raped. So obviously we can't be talking about Yisrael. Ve'ela be'eshes koyin. So let's go through then. Evidently the Mishnah must be talking by elimination about the wife of a koyin. Again, Iber Rotzen, if she's saying Tmei Ani Loch, in the sense that she's saying, I was Mizana willingly. Again, same thing. Would she get a ksuba in that case? Would she be any less than an Eishes Yisrael? Would she be any less oser than an Eishes Yisrael in that situation? If even a Yisrael's wife, where had it been Ba'onis, she's mutter to him, but because Berotzen, not only is she oser to him, but she forfeits a ksuba, how much more so with the wife of a Kohen? Ela lav Ba'onis. So it must be, we're talking about the wife of a Kohen, and it was an onus. So when she says, Tmei Ani Loch, so this is, we already said this in the Mishnah, but the Mishnah hadn't actually spelled it out in so many words, that was, we were relying on the conclusion in the Gemara over here. So the Papa is saying that he and his fellow Talmidim, when Rava asked them this question about the Eishes Kohen getting Huxuba, they demonstrated that our Mishnah must be referring to that case by elimination, because it can't be referring to a, can't be referring to Yisrael's wife, and it can't be referring to a Kohen's wife, Berotzen, so it must be Ba'onis, V'katoni yesh lo ksuba. And the Mishnah says that according to Mishnah Rishona, she had a ksuba. Even according to Mishnah Achrona, we didn't say she doesn't get a ksuba. We just said, according to Mishnah Achrona, the husband is not required to believe her without some further evidence. But if there, if such evidence comes up, then yes, the implication is he'd have to pay her a ksuba. So that was the answer to Rava's test to the Papa and the other Talmid. The Gemara says he both. So now we have a question in this connection. So we're saying that if a woman says to her husband that I'm also to you on the grounds of, in this case, we established that we're talking about that that she's saying that she's being an Eishes Kohen, that she was raped. Now the question is, and we're saying that according to Mishnah Rishona, he has to believe her, and according to Mishnah Achrona, he doesn't. So now the question is, what if she says to her husband, you divorced me? Mahu, what would be the din? Would we allow her to, remarry? The basic question is, we said in Mishnah Achrona, we don't believe her to say Tmei Ani, because we say, she may just have decided that she wants out of her marriage and she, so there's somebody else that she likes whom she wants to marry. Do we say the same thing over here? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Hamnona Toshma. Well, Rav Hamnona says, let's bring a proof from our Mishnah. We said, Hoy Medes Tmei Ani Loch. We said the case which he says, I'm Tomei to you. So now we said, according to Mishnah Rishona, her husband has to believe her. So first of all, according to Mishnah Rishona, there's no question that we should have to believe her, says Rav Hamnona. Why should it be any different? Da'afilu, the Mishnah Achrona. And Rav Hamnona says, even according to the Mishnah Achrona, even according to when the Chachamim changed their minds, the Katani Loi Mehemna, and the Mishnah had said that we don't believe her, the difference is, you could say, Hosam Hudu Meshachra, the difference is, Rav Hamnona says, you could argue that in that case of Tmei Ani Loch, there's a concern, why are the Chachamim saying he doesn't have to believe her? After all, she may be lying. She knows, after all, the husband has no way of knowing whether what she's saying is true. So therefore, she figures she can get away with it. But if she claims you divorced me, he knows, of course, whether he gave her a get or not, because it has to be with his rotzen, and he or his shliach has to give it to her. So, Nehemna, we should believe her to say that she's divorced. We should use the chazaka that a woman will not be so chutzpahdik as to say a blatant lie to her husband, that he divorced her, when in fact he did not. So therefore, Rav Hamnona says the answer would be that we should in fact believe her. And now the Gemara is going to go through and discuss this. In the end, the Ran says the halacha is like Rav Hamnuna, but you actually have a the Ran refers over here to a and other Rishonim discuss a multi way machloikas on the question. Suppose fine, we say that, so. What does that mean? Does it mean that she literally is allowed to get remarried? Or does it mean that she can't necessarily get remarried? We just have to be choshish. Suppose now somebody else goes, and this is how the Raiva learns it, for example. Suppose now somebody else goes and does kiddushin with her. We have to be choshish that kiddushin might take, and therefore she need to get from him the stuff. It doesn't necessarily mean though that she can actually go through with the marriage with him, because unless she has some kind of proof that she had a gift, then we can't necessarily take her fully at her word. Then on top of that, you have a machloikas. If we say that if we say she is allowed to get remarried, as most of the posts can say, then you have the Ran brings over here a detailed machloikas on the question: can she collect her ksuba? On the one hand, we can say that yes, once she's allowed to remarry, she should be allowed to collect her ksuba. We learned in Masechta Ksubas the concept of medrash ksuba, where we say we darish in the phrases that it says in the ksuba, and we learn halachas from them, even though the ksuba to begin with was not made by the leaders of the Jewish people. It was made, the nusach of it was made by people as a minhag, and eventually developed into a fixed nusach, but nevertheless, we can darish from it. And the expression in it is, when you get remarried, then you can collect what's coming to you. Well, she's remarried, therefore she should be able to. Therefore the Ran brings, the Ramban holds that yes, she could collect her ksuba. The Ran says, okay, maybe only Ikuk Ksuba, maybe not Tosfos Ksuba. But then there are other Rishonim who disagree on that and say that no, she can't collect her Ksuba. And then the Ran brings another possibility from the Ri. It depends whether she's primarily saying that I want to get divorced, or whether she's primarily saying I want to collect my Ksuba. And we had something similar like that. We had something similar to that at the end of Yevamos, drawing the distinction between a woman who says, my husband is dead, let me remarry, versus my husband is dead, I want to collect my ksuba. Or even we said, what if she says both? I want to collect my ksuba and I want to get remarried. So you have a number of different opinions among the Rishonim on this question. Yes, we accept what Rav Hamnuna is saying, but to what extent do we accept it? Is it to the extent that she even could get remarried? According to most Rishonim, yes. According to the Ravid, no. And number two, according to most of the Rishonim, that she can get married, can she collect her ksuba or not? And you have this three-way machlokas whether she can. Anyway, that was Rav Hamnuna's statement. Omalei Rava, but Rava says to Rav Hamnuna, Adraba, on the contrary. So what are you telling me, Rav Hamnuna? You're saying in the Mishnah you have Tnei Ani Loch, and you're saying, according to Mishnah Rishonah, we believed her, and according to Mishnah Achronah, we would still maybe believe her, because how could she lie about such a thing when her husband knows for a fact that if her husband knows for a fact that he didn't? But Rava says, Adraba, on the contrary, you could argue, Afilo the Mishnah Rishonah, on the contrary, even according to Mishnah Rishonah, the Ketani Mehemna, where we said that if she says that she was Nanas, then we would believe her. On the contrary, you could say, because she's not going to be so likely to make a claim that's going to humiliate her. It's a big bizoyan to her, after all, that she was raped. So we could assume maybe that she's not going to make such a claim unless she actually is telling the truth. So therefore, according to Mishnah Rishonah, we believed her, and according to Mishnah Achronah, we still said maybe not. Maybe after all, she might be lying in order to get out of this marriage and be able to marry somebody else. Abel Chocha, but in the case of Geir Ashtami, there's no bizoyan in her having been divorced. And you could say, the Taki Flomin Gavra, there may be times when she's stronger than the husband, meaning that because she's so angry, Taki means strong. So the Ran explains, it means she's so angry at him, she's going to strengthen herself and steal herself to be able to say a lie in front of the husband and tell him Geir Ashkani, even though he in fact didn't. The Mefarish, printed under Rashi's name, has a different explanation of takif. Literally, the word takif can also mean harsh. So it can mean that she's had a very harsh time with her husband. He hasn't been treating her well. And therefore, maybe she would be able to get together the chutzpah to be able to say to his face that that he divorced her, even though it's not really, even though it's not really the case. And then the Mefarish brings another possibility. Takifla can mean that she has a powerful Yetzirah. She has this other person that she has plans to marry, and therefore she has a powerful Yetzirah, and that will be powerful enough maybe to induce her to even say a blatant lie, even though she knows there's a chance she may be caught out on it. Anyway, so Rava says, Mi'izo, Mi'izo. So you could say that nevertheless she would actually have the chutzpah to say Gerashtani, even though it's not in fact the case. So on the contrary, Rava says, you, Rav Amnuna, are saying that according to both Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah Achrona, we should believe her. I'm arguing on the contrary. Even Mishnah Rishona wouldn't believe her, let alone Mishnah Achrona, where Mishnah Achrona says that even claiming that she was raped, which is a big deny for her, she might make such a claim falsely in order to get out of her marriage. Incidentally, by the way, the Achronim talk about, Pnei Yeshua talks about, even though, again, we do end up accepting Rav Hamnuna's statement, the Gemara brings it in other places in Shas and doesn't ask about it, but the Pnei Yeshua elsewhere points out that still, even according to Rav Hamnuna, only when there's no opposing reasons that would to believe her. In other words, let's say, for example, imagine you have a woman who was accused of being mizana and is chayiv nisa, and she's going to say, as she's going to make a claim on her behalf, that as they're taking her out to nisa, that geirashtani, we're not going to believe her because, of course, she wants to save her life. So then we would say that she's chutzpahdik enough to do that. Then the Pnei Yeshua also points out, you know, practically speaking, you need Hasra before she can be executed anyhow. If she didn't make that claim at the time of the Hasra, we're not going to accept that claim now. And then there's another point also. First of all, the Gemara elsewhere talks about that this Chazaka in Yishim Izapanah would only apply when her husband is present. When he's not present, in order to, like this, when he's present, if she says Gerashtani and it's not true, he'll right away say, what are you talking about? I never divorced you. But if he's not present, then the Gemara says elsewhere, she may feel free to lie about such a thing, even if Hamnuna is not talking about such a thing. And similarly, Rabbi Akiva Eger talks about an idea that, listen, you know, if she's already also to her husband anyway, imagine in the Pnei Yeshua scenario, Edom have come and said that she was Mizana. Look, she's already going to be also to her husband at that point anyway, until we clear things up. So now, being already separated, being already also from her husband, she might well lie and say that he divorced her, and we're not necessarily going to accept that. So back to the Gemara. Okay, so again, so we have a machloikus between Rav Hamnuna and Rava, whether we're going to believe her whether there are any circumstances when we're going to believe her to say Gerashtan, that you divorced me. According to Rav Hamnuna, yes. According to Rava, no. So the Gemara says, Masif Rav Masharshia. So Rav Masharshia says, I have a contradiction against Rava. The second case of our Mishnah was Hashamayim Beini Levenach. We have the case where she says Shemayim is between me and you, which we discussed yesterday. What that means, we said that our Gemara is going to make it very clear that we're saying that he doesn't have Gvuras Anoshim, as it's called in Halacha. He doesn't have the potency to be able to have normal relations with her, and in particular to have children with her. We talked about yesterday, the Ran brings from a Yerushalmi and a Medrash that has alternate explanations of it, but our Gemara is not accepting those alternate explanations. It understands a Shemayim Ben Yilvenach to mean that she's saying, what I'm going to say is something known only other than me, the only one who knows about it is Hashem, because of course nobody can be there when we're having relations. Anyway, the Mishnah had mentioned that case, a Shemayim Ben Yilvenach, the Mishnah Rishona, where the Mishnah Rishona had said that we do believe her. So that being the case, so Kyufta de Rava, or Agos Habach says Tevi Kyufta de Rava. Should we say that that's a refutation of Rava? Because according to Rava, Because let's consider, here there's no particular embarrassment in making such a claim. It doesn't reflect badly on her that her husband is not able to have relations. V'katani demehemna, and still the Mishnah says that we believe her. So you're telling me, Rava, that in any case where there's no embarrassment to her in it, she might lie, which includes the case of Ger Ashdani. Well, then, according to Rava, why, according to Mishnah Rishona, in Mishnah Rishona would we have said that we believe her to say Shemayim Beni Lebenach? And the answer is Chasava Rava Hasam. The answer is that Rava is going to figure over there. Because it's not enough if she just says Hashemayim Beinu Lebeinach. We do ask her to spell out what she means by that. So therefore, she has to spell out She'ein Yoreh Kechetz, that his Zera does not shoot like an arrow, which is something very personal between the two of them. So it would be pashtus, it would work only if they never had children. If they had children, then she doesn't have as much of a claim. Right. I mean, b'chlal, even, we learned in Yevamos, so according to most opinions, we said according to Rabbi Yechim and Breka, I think it was, a woman is chayiv in theory of Rivia. The halacha is not like that. She's not. The only thing was, we said, that she can claim that she wants children to be able to help her in her old age. So yeah, b'pashtus, if they already have children, and then this condition develops, she doesn't really have much of a claim. But again, according to Mishnah Achrona, we still said, when we said Yasu Derech Bakosha, so we had a couple of explanations about it, one of them being that it means that the Beis Din is going to tell her, you know what, try to deal with it, try to work it out between you and your husband, don't be in such a hurry to make him divorce you. Eventually, as we learned in Yevamos, 10 years may pass without them having children, then there's more grounds for us to say that they need a divorce, because he has a mitzvah, period, Rivia, but that's something else. Anyway. The point is, the Gemara is saying, the kiven delay sagi la delay omra en yorekhet, since it will be impossible for us to accept her claim unless she spells out that he's not yorekhet, so then, ilo isa kidaka omra, so we can assume if it wasn't actually true, like what she's saying, loy omrele, then she wouldn't tell it to him. In other words, after all, it is something embarrassing. She would be. It's one thing to say generally Hashemayim Beinu Lebeinach and allow Beis Din to draw their own conclusions. It's another thing for her to actually stand up in Beis Din and say, when my husband and I have relations, he is not Yoreh Kechetz. That would be something humiliating for her. And even though it doesn't reflect badly on her, but still, to talk about it in public, things that happen in private when they're having relations, we can assume that maybe not. Therefore, according to Mishnah Rishona, we should believe her. That doesn't necessarily show that when it comes to divorce, where there's no gnai at all, that she might not lie about it, even according to Mishnah Rishona, not necessarily. So that's not a contradiction on Rava. Okay, so the Gemara asks, what about Shemayim Beinu Lebeinach Mishnah Achrona Tevet Yufta Derav Hamnona? So what about, on the contrary, then, the case of this same case of Shemayim Beinu Lebeinach, according to the, should be a according to Mishnah Achrona, where we say we don't believe her, or we don't outright say we don't believe you, we just say let's try to work it out between the two. We don't automatically say she's entitled to be divorced. So shouldn't that be Tiyufta Derav Hamnona? Shouldn't that be a contradiction on Rav Hamnona? Because again, let's consider because in this case, when she says Hashemayim Beinu Lebeinach, she knows about it. Her husband also knows about it. Her husband knows about it. Actually, the correct girsa over here is really supposed to be, and Agoy Sabach makes that clear, it's supposed to be Dib Baila Yodaba. The Ran also has it this way. She knows that her husband knows about it. In other words, the Pashas, he's also going to know whether he's Yoreh Kechetz. And the Mishnah is saying that according to Mishnah Achrona, when she says Hashemayim Beinu Lebeinach and spells out, it means he's Yoreh Kechetz, then we're not going to believe her. She's claiming that he's not. Now, Pashtus, if in fact he is, he would stand up right there in Beis Din and say, you don't know what you're talking about. So that would be similar to Gerushin. We're the same thing. He knows whether he divorced her or not. And if she were to say that, then he would stand up and say otherwise. So Rav Hamnuna is saying Chazaka that she won't be Meiz Panera because she's not going to say something that her husband can right away contradict her. That's what we're saying. As far as gerushin, as far as divorce. Well, then, according to Rav Hamnuna, the same thing should apply as far as not yoda tachet. And yet, the Mishnah Achronah is telling us we don't believe her. So that's a contradiction under Rav Hamnuna. V'chatoni delay mehemna. So, and we say that we're not believing her. So, according to Rav Hamnuna, why not? The same way as we believe her, according to Rav Hamnuna, to say that she was divorced, the same way we should believe her to say that her husband is not yoda tachet. The answer is Kosavar Ramnuna, because Ramnuna figures Hochanami, he also, it's not necessarily something that her husband knows. He gufa omra, she may say to herself, Nihi dibia yoda, of course he knows whether he had bia with me, biyodakhet mi yoda. Does he in fact know whether he was yodakhet? In other words, that might not necessarily be something that the husband himself realizes. His wife feels it when they're having bia, she feels the sensation of it. He may not. And therefore she may figure that she can get away with lying, as opposed to Gerashkani, where there's no wiggle room like that. Now,
the Gerashkani business is very, very difficult because she's a married woman.
Well, that's what we said. That's what we said before. When she says Gerashkani, that's what we said. According to most Rishonim, fine. It means even that she can remarry on the basis of this Chazaka. According to the Raivad, we said that not, because the Chazaka is only enough to make it that now maybe she's only a suffocatious ish, but not to the extent where she could actually remarry. That's also the point. The same way as we learned in Yevamos that Isha Daiko Minsava, she knows that if she gets remarried and it turns out that the claim was false, then there were very heavy penalties for her to pay. So, yeah. The Rosh points out that it's not necessarily that the husband doesn't know that he's Yoreh Chet. She may think that he doesn't know. Therefore she might figure she's able to get away with it, as opposed to a Gerashkani where there's no such wiggle room. So that's that then. So Mishumach in the Shakra, therefore she may figure she can get away with lying, which is not the case with Gerashtani. So in the end, again, the halacha, as we said, is like a Hamnuna. If she says Gerashtani, we do believe her. And then again, you have the discussion about does that mean that she can actually get remarried or not? According to most Rishonim, yes. According to the Raivad, no. And then in addition, can she collect her ksuba, where you have the various possibilities. She can collect it, she can't collect it at all, or it depends what kind of claim she's making and based in. The Ran also adds, now the fact is, we did learn also in Yevamos that we said, we had a case over there where after 10 years they haven't had children, and each one of them is claiming that the other one's fault. He's saying that she's not a bas bonim, that she's not capable of having children. She's saying the other way around.
What's the problem? Both get divorced.
Well, that's fine. The question is, in other words, the question is, does she collect her ksuba or not? So if it turns out that it was because she's not able to have children, then he has valid grounds to say it's not my fault. I would have wanted to stay married to you, but I can't because 10 years have passed and we haven't had children.
It's not
her fault in the sense, but nevertheless, though, the point is we can still talk about that he has the right to say I shouldn't have to pay the tzuba under conditions like that where I'm not divorcing her because I wanted to, but rather because I have.
Is that the list where the Gemara speaks about on what rights he can give her a divorce and give her and pay the ksuba not pay? Does it bring this up that it's married for 10 years and they can't have children?
Yeah, we did talk about it in Yevamos, yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, yeah. It doesn't. Yeah. It's not, first of all, you can't prove it. These days you could.
Well, these days, right, but even in those days, I mean, you have rules about it. There is quite a bit of detail about how we would know.
She was fine. In fact, she was muka 8 when she was a child.
Muka 8 is something else, but yeah, that doesn't affect her fertility. But yeah, the actual Gemara we had over there was that who oim aminav v'hi amrimine So he's saying, I know for a fact that she's the one not capable of having children. Therefore, I shouldn't have to pay a ksuba. And she's saying the other way around. So Rav Ami says over there that in Dvorim Shebeina Levena, things that involve the relationship between him and her, something like that, where only the two of them know it, then we would say Nan Menes. That we would believe her because again, as the Gemara says, similar to what it says over here, she would be able to know whether he's Yerda Kachetz. He may not know that point. No, the Gemara elsewhere establishes that if the Zera is not Yerda Kachetz, then it won't be potent. You can have, even nowadays, in medicalese, you have sometimes where a person is able to ejaculate, but the Zera, the cells themselves are dead or something. So if it just dribbles out, then whatever the case, the Gemara assumes throughout shots, if it just dribbles out, it's not going to be potent. So now we're saying that Rav Ami is saying that he doesn't know, that he can't know whether he's Yerda Kachetz or not, therefore we would believe her. He, on the other hand, was saying that not. She may, according to Rav Hamnuna, was saying she may actually think that she may actually lie about it and try to get away with it. So do we believe her or not? So the Ramban discusses he brings from the Ramban. The difference is that there, the husband is the one who wants to divorce her and make her forfeit her ksuba. So we have Chazaka in Yishamid. Here we're talking about where she's the one who wants out of the marriage. She's the one who comes forth with the claim that he's not Yerda Kachetz. So we could say she may not have that ha'oza, unless she's telling the truth or unless she figures she can get away with it. But over there, he's the one who wants to divorce her. Therefore, she may make a counterclaim so we would say that she might make a false counterclaim. But since she knows and he doesn't, then therefore, all we're saying is it's not right that he should be able to make her forfeit her ksuba when, after all, she can always say, but how do you know for sure? You're claiming that I'm not the bas banim over here, but the fact is you don't really know whether you're techetz. And therefore, I should at least be. If you want to divorce me, fine. But at least I should be entitled to a ksuba. Yeah.
He has a choice to marry a second woman.
He has a choice to marry a second wife. Also, that is also true. Right. So that's that. So now the Gemara is going to go on to another topic, which is we had the going back to the case in the Mishnah of Tmei Anilach. So we established that the case of the Mishnah is talking about where we said that Mishnah Rishonah says that she can even get Huxuba. We said by elimination it's talking about the wife of a Kohen who was Nanas. But now that's going to lead the Gemara into discussing now what happens if you have a woman is claiming Tmei Anilach in a way that would actually answer her to her husband. And the same kind of thing. The cases involving the wife of a Kohen where she's making a claim that would answer her to her husband. Remember, Mishnah Achronah says he doesn't have to believe her. So now we're going to have a couple of examples of that. So the Gemara says, "Hahi itza." There was a certain woman. The whole yoima, and her husband was a kohen. The whole yoima, the tashmish. Every day when they had relations, mikadma mashia yodi lagavra, she would get up early and she'd bring water for her husband to wash his hands. Yomachad asule maya lemusha. One morning she did that. She brought water as usual for him to wash. On the law, he says, "What are you doing? Habdab milsa le have a seidna. This time we didn't have relations. Why are you bringing me water?" But she says, "Oh, but I did have relations last night. Im kain, if so, chad min nochrim ahaluye dehavu hocha heidna. It must have been one of those goyim who go around. He was selling ahol, which is a type of spice that were around here today." If it wasn't you, Joma Minhain, it might have been one of them. So in other words, she's saying, I know I had relations. If it wasn't with you, then it must be one of these goyish peddlers who goes around that he must have sneaked in, and I thought that he was you. So now, again, she being the wife of a Kohen, if we accept her claim, then it means she's also to her husband. But Rav Nachman says, don't worry about it. She's putting her eyes on somebody else. In other words, she wants out of this marriage. She wants to get divorced and then to be able to be married. The less from Shoshua Mila, and there's no substance to what she's saying. We can ignore what she's saying unless, of course, there's some kind of evidence. Witnesses, of course, would be the gold standard. But even if there's some other kind of evidence, and Shulchan Aruch talks about in some detail. We talked about it a little bit in Yevamos. This sort of thing also, for example, is Eidei Dover Mechor. There can be witnesses who didn't see any actual act, but they see something that strongly suggests that something went on over here. For example, they find uh, they they and they find, let's say, that we see she's putting back on her clothes or different things like that. So actually, in this case, yes. So in that case, then we'd have more reason to believe her. But if it's just that she's saying, I had relations, it wasn't with you, it must have been with somebody else, then Rav Nachman is saying we can ignore that.
If it's something like he was out of town and he came back in the middle of the night and there was no one else there, she could say, oh, I thought it was you. But if they're in the same room, to have a relationship with someone else.
Right, I mean, I guess.
Through the whole thing, he must be a dead man.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But I guess we have to assume that maybe, I mean, I guess we have to assume that when the Gemara was, that maybe we should believe her, maybe Taka, they were sleeping in different rooms, who knows. Yeah. Okay.
Just came back to business.
Yeah, them. Whatever. Anyway, similarly, here's another example. Hahi itza deloi have a b'dicha daita b'hadei gavra. There was a woman who was not one time, or one morning, she was not very happy with her husband. She was upset at him. Omer laha idna maishna, so he asks her, what's different? What put you in a bad mood? Omer lay, she tells him, me oilam letzi outen b'derach eretz ki ha'idna. You never hurt me when it came to derach eretz, which is tashmish, the way you did this time. Omer lay says, what are you talking about? Lo have a hada milsa. We didn't have relations this time. And again, Omer lay, she says, im kain, if so, I know I had relations and whoever it was hurt me. Holei nochrim naftuye, the havuhocha idna. Must have been one of those boyisha neft peddlers. Neft is a volatile liquid. By Yosef, for example, it says that usually the Arabs would carry that stuff and said they were carrying spices. Yeah, it's a volatile and very flammable liquid, kerosene or something like that. So one of these kerosene peddlers that were around here now, he antloy, if it wasn't you, Jomachad Min Hoin, then it may have been one of them. And again.
If they're in the same room, same house, doesn't make
sense. Right, okay, but maybe it was different rooms again. And again, Omlahu Rav Nachman says to them, or Bechlal says, Loi tashvichon ba, he says, don't pay any attention to her. Nesenes enea ba'achar havi, she put her eyes on somebody else, and therefore, so therefore she's making a false claim in order to get out of a marriage. Why the Gemara has to bring two stories, I haven't seen anything about, but maybe because in the second case she's claiming that they were selling neft, which is pretty strong stuff. It's one thing, the ones who are selling ahol, which is a spice, at least it's a fragrance, at least maybe you might say that she's claiming that. But for her to claim that she had relations with somebody who sells neft, which is filthy, smelly stuff, maybe we should say that we should believe her because she wouldn't be saying such a thing about herself. Nevertheless, Rav Nachman is saying that no, she may have made up the whole story.
That could be true. Either it's impossible that it should happen because she knows it was a stranger, wasn't her husband, or she's, or it could happen because she wouldn't lie.
Whatever the case. Right. But also it may be in the first example, she actually did something that's regular after Tashmish. She brought her husband water. So therefore we'd have more reason to say maybe that she's making up a story and she's trying to cover it with this. In the second one, when she's angry at her husband, she didn't even know, you could argue she doesn't even know that her husband is necessarily going to ask her about it and that she'll have a chance to tell him the story. So therefore maybe we should think there's some truth to it and Rav Nachman is telling us still not. Without any evidence, we don't have to believe it. Okay. Another example. There was a man who was hiding out in a house together with a woman. This was a married woman. The master of the house, the husband, came into the house. Paute noyef lahutza, the noyef, the one who was there to be mezana with the woman. So you have, in other words, there was a Reuven is married to Rachel, and now you have this other guy, Shimon, was in the house hiding out with Rachel while the husband wasn't home.
Oh.
So now when Reuven came home, paute noyef lahutza. So now the noyef Shimon broke through a fence made out of palm leaves. And he ran away. So now the question is the wife also to her husband? So Omar Rava Itza Sharia. So Rava says the wife is still mutter. Im Issa to Ovid Isura, because we can say that if that Noyef in fact did the Isur and did have relations with her, Irkusi, having Mirkas, he would have actually hidden, he wouldn't have run away in a way that the husband will see him. He would actually hide out so that the husband doesn't find him, and then he'll be able to do this in the future. So therefore we have a reason to think that he was, maybe it's true, fine, maybe he wasn't in the house for innocent purposes in the first place, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he actually was able to accomplish anything or that he's going to try such a thing like this. In other words, if he did that, if we had reason that he would to say that he was Mizaneh, then he would have then he would have hidden out, so that way he'd have the opportunity to do it again in the future like this. Yichud would have been an issue. We can still say the guy was doing wrong by being in Yichud with her. For that, in fact, the Gemara is calling him Noyef, which means somebody who is Mizaneh, even though we're saying the wife is not necessarily Osir. But now there is some discussion about it. Tosfos brings from the Aruch that what happened was. That the Noyef, before he actually ran away, he was already seen by the husband. So in other words, if he thought he hadn't been seen yet, sure, he'd try to run away. But now, if he knew he was already seen, then he was in fact planning to do the Isser, then he would have hidden himself in a way to begin with that the husband shouldn't find him. The fact that he was in a place where the husband was able to see him shows that there's less likelihood that he was actually Mizaneh with her. So it's a bit of a subtle thing, but still we're saying, in other words, that we can take up the possibility that he wasn't actually Mizaneh with her, and therefore even if she's so in this case we could argue that maybe she was even an Ashes Yisrael, and the question would be whether she's also to her husband. But regardless, an Ashes Kohen or Ashes Yisrael, either way, we don't necessarily have to say that they were Mizaneh, such that she should be also to her husband.
Could she be claiming the ultimate? I didn't know if it was my husband.
If there's a way that she could claim that, then fine. Tosfos actually refers to something that they discuss also on this in Yevamos. In Yevamos, we had a sugya about Mechor HaDavar. Like we said before, we have Edim that they didn't actually see Znus, but they saw something that strongly suggests that there was Znus. So then we said that's a valid reason for the husband to divorce her. So Tosfos discusses over there in Yevamos the difference is that in Or Gemara, she's actually saying Tmei Ani. So you have both. You have that there was a person there, and she's saying Tmei Ani, which is similar to the way we had it in the Mishnah. And the Gemara is saying that still it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to believe her. Where she says Tahor Ani, Tosfos says, then she would be Mutter anyway. Because unless there was Pinu Yastira, you can't ask her to her husband when she herself is denying that anything happened.
She's denying because she's embarrassed about it.
She may be denying it because she's embarrassed, but nevertheless, we still need more solid proof. Fine, but nevertheless, we still need more solid proof in order to ask her to her husband.
So if she says Tmei Ani, you don't.
So if she says, so Tosfos is saying, if she says Tmei Ani, then if we, then there's evidence, then he divorces her and she loses her ksuba. Or Gemara then is talking about, even though she says Tmei Ani, and even though there was this guy there, because we have the reason to think that he wasn't actually Mizaneh with her, because then, as we said, he would have hidden inside the house rather than run out through the fence, where he knows the husband sees him, and where in fact the Oruch is saying that he knows that the husband saw him before he ran away, even the husband knows who he is, then we have reason to say that maybe in fact nothing happened, even though she's saying Tmei Ani. And the Gemara gives another case. Again, there was a Noyef who went in to visit a certain woman. Also, Gabra, the husband came home. Solik Noyef So the husband, the noyif went up, Esiv, bekloy baba, and he went and sat in the cloy of the house, which is inside the screen, the Ran explains, it means the screen in front of the door. So the Ran also, by the way, briefly refers to this matter of that the reason why the Gemara is needing to say in all these cases. So before we just had Tosfos saying that the reason why we need to mention in each of these cases why there's a reason to be mad to her is because she's saying Tmei Ani. The Ran also points out in these kinds of cases, the Baal Nefesh maybe should be machmer on himself and still divorce her. So the Gemara is saying, in these kinds of cases, because we have a reason to say that he wasn't actually mezanin with her, therefore even a Baal Nefesh would not have to. Okay, so this noyif, so the husband came home. Solik noyif is the cloy baba. So the noyif went and hid in the curtain in the curtain by the door.
I'm trying to say we learned the back of the siddur has a vilon where the shamash is
right
hide behind.
Right, so this is the same kind of thing. He wrapped himself in the vilon, basically. Have a machson tachli tamon. Now in the house there were tachli sitting on the table over there. Tachli is a kind of vegetable in English. It's called cress. They used to use it. They used to eat it in salads and as a side dish and things like that. The taminum chivda. A snake came and ate some of the tachli, where the Gemara mentions all over the place that if a snake eats or drinks from something, they may inject some of their venom into it, and it's poisonous to eat. A boy morid de basil mechom and hanu tachli. The master of the house, the husband, was about to eat some of those tachli, beloy daitu de insa, without the wife knowing. Omele hahu noyif. So all of a sudden, the noyif calls out from where he is, hiding in the curtain over there, loy techom in hoin, don't eat. Don't eat from those tachli, the taminun chivya, because a snake tasted them, and therefore they're dangerous for you.
So if the snake tasted them, why do you keep it on the table?
Because he didn't know. That's the thing. It was sitting on the table.
The wife
didn't. No. What we're saying is the tachli was sitting on the table. A snake came and tasted from them.
The only one who saw
apparently was this guy. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So Omar Rava intsay sharia. So Rava says the result of that is that we say in this case the wife is mutter. We don't say that this guy who was hiding inside the curtain over there was actually mezanin. Because we could say if in fact he did that iser nichale de leicho v'lebus, then he would actually prefer let the husband eat from this tachli and die from the poison, and then she'll be free to him. And we actually find the possible. We have a long extended moshul in Sefer Yechezkel where he compares the Jewish people to two women, two sisters who were mezana. You have the 10 shvatim and the 2 shvatim, so therefore they're compared to two different women. In the kinnis on Tisha B'Av night and also day, we have a kinnah that we say called Shomrin Kol Titzin. It was composed by Shlomo Ibn Gviril, the famous Paitan. That actually takes that mushal from Yechezkel a little further and gives us the aftermath of it. Psukim are describing how you have these two sisters who they grew up in Mitzrayim and they were Mazana there, and then they later on and then so on and so forth, they were worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing all kinds of terrible Averis, and then they get their punishment. And so now the Paitan takes that and he has like the Ohola and Oholiva, the names of the two sisters that are given there in the Psukim, are like arguing with each other which one had it worse. So Shomron called Ohola, which one got bigger patch, basically. So Shomron, who's called Ohola, and the pasuk over there says, I had it worse because your kingdom lasted longer than mine. And Aholiva, which is the Yehuda and Binyamin, answer back, you know what, on the other hand, I had many more Golias than you did. And I had the Beis Hamikdash destroyed twice, and so on and so forth. And the Paitan finishes, Hashem, have Rachmanis on them. And Hashem, have Rachmanis on their poverty and their miserableness, and take them out of Golos once and for all, so that argument will finally be over. Anyway, in Yechezkel, he has a long mashal about this. So he describes over there that they deserve punishment. He says, "Kini efu, because they committed adultery, the dum b'yadehen, and they have blood in their hands." So in other words, the point is that if this guy really was a noyif, then he would also, not minding having blood on his hand, that the husband should be dead, He would rather that way because then he has freer access to her. So therefore, Fakert, if he's calling out, don't eat these tachli because they're poison, then we have reason to believe that in fact he did not, that, but at least he's not, a noyef. The Ben Yehoyada actually mentions that the reason why the Gemara has to mention that it was without the knowledge of the woman is because if it was with knowledge, if she knows that this tachli is poison and her husband is about to eat it and she doesn't say anything, then yeah, we have every right to think that maybe in fact she was mizana and therefore she wants him out of the picture. Yeah. So the Gemara says pshita. Well, in that case, isn't that obvious? Why should we? It's an obvious thing that yes, a person who is choshur, a person who's suspect of niyuf, would also be suspect of shpichus dam. That he might kill the person, or at least that he might not mind if the guy is dead. Actually, the Shita Mekubetzes says, you know, Al Pi Halacha, Tosfos points out, just because a person is choshed on one mitzvah doesn't mean he's choshed on other ones, so it doesn't automatically mean that a noyef is necessarily choshed on Shvichos Damim, but yeah, the Shita Mekubetzes says, fine, but at least that he's not going to save somebody where saving that person will prevent him from doing this thing in the future. Yeah.
Right, to take somebody on guts. Right. Make yourself known that you're there.
Right.
So not actually killing him, but preventing him from getting killed.
So. Right. Anyway, so the Gemara is saying pshita, so isn't it obvious? Also, there's a point that Beis Halevi, okay, you can say a noyef is not going to stand, go and kill people randomly, but here you're talking about that he might do it for the purpose of niyuf in order to make it easier to be mezana with this woman in the future. So therefore, maybe we would say that he should. So the answer is ma'u dikema. You might think, so in other words, the question is, what is Rava's chidush? So the answer is, ma'u detema, without Rava telling you, you would have thought, isura ova, maybe in fact the guy was mizana with her, behind omale, the reason why he warns the husband not to eat this tachli is, on the contrary, you could argue, denichale de loyle mispal, he might prefer that the husband does not die, to have it in sale, mayim gnuvim yimtiku, we can say, you might have, the wife is going to be in the situation, the pasuk describes, stolen waters are sweet. In other words, sometimes a person gets more of a thrill and more of an excitement from doing something that's also, from sneaking in and doing something that's also, the lechem starting yinam and bread that's eaten in secrecy is pleasant. In other words, fakir. Maybe we would say the guy wants the husband to be alive so that every time he goes in and mizana with this woman, he has this thrill. Look at this, I'm doing something also and I'm getting away with it. So maybe on the contrary, you would have thought that maybe the fact that he's warning the husband does not in fact mean that he's not mizana. Therefore, Kamash Malon, therefore Rava tells us not so. As a matter of fact, we don't assume that. We do assume that he would rather have easier access to her, and therefore, or actually what it is the Tosfos explained, it may be true that Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku, but he doesn't necessarily know that. So he doesn't know necessarily that it's going to be sweeter and more pleasant for him to be able to do it in a way that's also, he would figure, you know what, to have easier access is going to be easier. So therefore, if we see that instead he saved the husband, then we have reason to say that in fact he was not mizana with the woman. This concept of lechem of mayim gnuvim yimtiku, by the way, has a positive side in it as well. You have, for example, the famous thing that says about the Alter Rebbe and Rabbi Avraham Amalach, that the deal was that Rabbi Avraham will learn Chassidus, will learn Kabbalah, Pnimiyas HaTorah with the Alter Rebbe for a certain amount of time, and the Alter Rebbe will learn Nigla with Rabbi Avraham Amalach for a certain amount of time, and it says Rabbi Avraham was so mufshet, he was so like, he didn't know anything about what's going on in the world, to the extent that when he was partiffed in Chassidus, to the extent the Alter Rebbe could go and move the hands of the clock back, in order to steal more time for learning Chassidus with him. And he said afterwards, this is an example of mayim gnuvim yimtiku. What you get by stealing, what you get in that underhanded way, is in a way a sweeter learning than what you would get otherwise. So there is a positive thing of mayim gnuvim yimtiku. You have the concept of Chassidus and Gnevis. You have the case over there, for example, of Chassidim who so to speak, stole Ksavim from the Rebbeim in order to be able to copy them out, so we have them more widely. So there is a positive idea of mayim gnuvim yimtiku, but here we're saying, in our Gemara over here, that the noyef, though, may not realize that. And therefore, Kamash Malon, therefore, Rava is telling us that you should know he may not realize that, and therefore, if he saved the husband, then we can say that in fact he's not a noyef, that at worst he was over on Yichud or whatever, but not that he actually went as far as asking the wife to her husband.
So now this would be a guy, it wouldn't be different.
But fascists, we're talking about a year. Right. But if it would be a guy, then maybe it would be different, yeah.
It wouldn't be, should I have learned time to write the Jesus Gemara? It's okay. But for a regular person, this is like, it's a very funny way to end it.
So it is. I was thinking it is kind of an odd way to end the Masechta, but maybe the vote is, not to do that. Well, you do have to learn Siddurus, but I was thinking maybe the Gemara is finishing off with these stories to show how even the Kal Shamakalim, even the lowest Yid, we're calling the people in these stories, we're calling them Noyif, and still the Gemara is finding a Limud Schus on them that maybe even though they may have the intention of it, they don't actually carry it out.
Not to the point I want him to be killed. They didn't do anything
not to wrong. The point he wants, right, not to the point he wants him to be dead, or not to the point even where he was Mizana at all. We could say that, again, like we said, he would have hidden out rather than running away, etc. So yes, so this may be. This Gemara is finishing off over here with examples where even though you have somebody who seemingly is a Peshea, and you have also, for example, she is not necessarily the most kosher woman, but to go so far as to say that they did a serious issue like that, we're going to be Malamed Schus on them and find reasons to say that it's not so.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't caught. He was hiding by the curtain. He could have just been quiet.
That's it. Hadron Allah Ba'il Nadorim, Slikul Amasach Nadorim.